Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a broad look at global financial markets. And to do that, we're very kindly joined by Fiona Sincotta, who is a senior market analyst at City Index. Fiona, very much welcoming you back to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be back on here, and Happy New Year as well.
And happy year. Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to our listeners if you haven't caught a podcast so far this year. So it's been a fascinating start to the year so far, Fiona. We're going to be discussing a number of key markets. We're going to be looking in particular at sterling, we're going to be looking at oil, and we're going to be looking at some equity markets as well as the macro drivers out there. But before we get into it, please just be able to give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself as well as City Index for those people that aren't aware.
Okay, thank you. So yes, I'm a senior market analyst at City Index. We are a CFD and spread trading brokerage. I've been in the market now for 40 years, and I haven't been here for that long, but I've been here for a good number of years. So, and you know, we deal with a complete broad range of markets, including equities, indices, currencies, commodities, and yeah, they're traded on a derivatives basis. So you sort of using margin to trade.
Fantastic. Thank you. So just looking at markets out there so far this year, Fiona, we had a very strong end to last year. So we have to look at what's happened so far in the very early days of 2024 in the context of what happened at the end of last year. But we have seen a bit of choppiness out there. Of course, there's a number of geopolitical tensions that are impacting markets, and we'll probably touch on those a little bit later on in the podcast. But it just seems we had a very good end to last year, but things are just looking a little bit soggy out there at the moment. And it's interesting to note, particularly in equity markets, that we've seen a bit of a sell-off in here in the UK. Nothing particularly big compared to some of the gains that we saw last year, especially towards the end of it. Again, in the US, slightly weaker start, although, again, a very strong finish out there. And then we're seeing some interesting moves in markets such as oil, which we are going to discuss. But just as a very broad question, Fiona, when you're looking out there and you see what's happened so far in the very early days of 2024, do you feel that could be a sign of things to come for markets for the rest of the year?
Yes, I think that's a very good point. I mean, you know, talking about what we've seen so far this year in relation to what we saw at the end of last year, we saw a phenomenal rally across particularly October, November, beginning of December. And that rally has really, you know, took a lot of us by surprise. It was much stronger than perhaps we would have expected as the market started to think about when will central banks begin cutting interest rates. So, you know, there was this really definitive moment as inflation, particularly in the US, dropped sharply lower, and also as the Federal Reserve sort of had a more dovish than expected meeting in November, and that just really swung the market around. When you see a huge rally in any market, it's quite often then to see a period of consolidation. And I think that's, you know, what we're seeing at the beginning of this year is that period of consolidation where the market's sort of, you know, just taking a breather. It's sort of really weighing up the drivers that had been sending stocks higher at the end of last year and that boosted sort of, you know, demand for riskier assets. And so, you know, there are still quite a few factors which the market is weighing up. There isn't necessarily clarity yet over, you know, things such as when will the major central banks start cutting rates? Will we avoid sort of, you know, recessions? Will there be that soft landing? So, you know, I think there is this base case scenario of a soft landing in the US, in the Eurozone and the UK, if there is a recession, it's expected to be mild. But I think the outlook is going to be choppy, and we'll probably be looking at a sort of a relatively rough flat end to the year. I mean, whilst you've got sort of an improving picture in the sense that inflation is falling, we also know that it's going to be a bumpy ride to that 2% level. You know, recent inflation data has showed us that growth is also expected to be weak. And I think the main concern here, as we head particularly into earnings season, sort of in the US and also here in the Europe and the UK, is stocks look pretty richly valued. And so that does leave little room for error. You know, expectations are quite high when stocks have had a big run up like that. And I think that's sort of what we're going to be watching out for is, you know, are we seeing the fundamentals that support that solid rally that we saw at the end of last year? And that's what we're waiting to see.
So I'm going to pick up on interest rates because you mentioned it there and tie that in to some extent with equities and the rally, because the rally in equities last year was pretty substantial over the last couple of months of the year. And that was, as you mentioned, Fiona, the markets pricing in comments from the central banks suggesting that they were done with interest rates. And then the markets really front running in pricing in interest rate cuts as soon as March of this year. But we're starting to see a little bit of pushback from that, particularly from the ECB today. There were some comments from one of their officials that investors shouldn't be banking on interest rate cuts from the ECB in early 2024. And of course, if we're looking over in the United States, all eyes are, of course, there. There's a huge market pricing for interest rate cuts, but it's not really being followed up by central bankers in terms of their projections that they gave us at the end of last year, as well as some of the comments that the officials are making there. You know, looking at this picture from a top-down scenario and looking at these influences on markets, do you think that there is a little bit of vulnerability to some extent in equities, given that strong rally that we've had, and also this disconnect between what the market's been pricing, if you're looking at interest rate futures and how much they're pricing, and what the Federal Reserve, for example, are actually saying? And could that make things pretty interesting for equities in the next couple of months if we start to see that disconnect stay with that big gap between your market pricing and what the Federal Reserve actually does?
Yes. You know, I think when market expectations for rate cuts in this case are not aligned with central banks, that does provide potential for volatility. At the end of the day, they can't both be right. So there does need to be at one point a reconciliation either between the market repricing its expectations or by a sort of, you know, change in tone from the central bank. And I think at the moment, you know, as you pointed out, the market has been very much ahead of the curve on rate cuts. You know, expectations have been since reined in from sort of, you know, the euphoria of late 2023 when the market really did seem to get quite carried away with expectations on rate cut. I think, you know, as far as the Bank of England were expecting, the market was pricing in around 5x25 basis point rate cuts in 2024. And the Fed, as far as the Fed is concerned, the market was pricing in around an 85% probability of the first rate cut coming in March. Now, we have had those expectations dialed back, but not massively, which I still find really interesting, particularly with relating to the US. I mean, I think it's around a 70% probability of that first rate cut in March, which given that Federal Reserve speakers have been, I think, still relatively hawkish in that respect, you know, saying that we're not expecting to cut rates until, for example, Raphael Bostic said Q3. You know, we've had several Federal Reserve speakers saying that it's just too early to really start putting dates to it. And that's the same with the ECB. You know, they've said quite consistently that it's premature to talk about rate cuts. And as well, we've had the same dialogue from Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey, who seems really quite insistent that it is definitely too early to talk about it. So, you know, from the market pricing in rate cuts starting in, well, and, you know, around 2 months' time, to sort of central bankers saying, actually, no, this isn't going to happen until probably, you know, Q2, maybe even Q3. There is definitely that disconnect there. And at some point, there's going to be the reconciliation between that. And that's going to be very much, I think, the focus on not only central bank speakers, at the central bank meeting, we've got the FOMC in January, but also on macro data. You know, the data is become even more sort of in focus than it was going through last year. Last year, we knew that sort of, you know, the banks, the central banks were going to be doing, you know, hiking interest rates as inflation remained high. Then we got to that period where they've paused. And now it's, you know, what does the data say? Does the data tell us that the inflation is going to be cooling more than expected, which hasn't been happening so far as we kick off 2024? But, you know, that's going to be the main focus. And it does leave, as we said, sort of, you know, potential for some volatility there.
Fantastic. Thank you. So I want to move on now, Fiona, and discuss the pound, and particularly the pound against the dollar, because it's quite interesting. You pull up a chart of cable going back to the beginning of 2021. We're pretty much bang in the middle of the trading ranges that we've seen since then. It's, of course, been a lot higher, but also a lot lower at this point in time. And again, we did see a strong end to 2023 from the pound against the dollar. So it'd be good to get your view, Fiona, on where this could go from here and what the factors are going to be that drives the pound going forward. Because, I mean, if you look at some of the economic data that's coming out from the UK, it's not particularly fantastic. I mean, there is still a chance that we're going to be entering a mild, a shallow recession. But then on the other side, you have the United States. And as you said, it looks like they're going to be heading for a soft landing. So that strength against the dollar that we saw at the end of last year is particularly fascinating, because it goes against what's actually happening on the ground in terms of the economic data. So what do you think the main drivers of that was? And how do you see that trading going forward in the next few months?
Yes. So the pound US dollar has rallied around 4% since the beginning of November. And a lot of that strength has been down to sort of central bank diversion. So, for example, we've had, you know, the Bank of England sounding more hawkish than the Federal Reserve was sounding at the sort of, you know, in that November period last year. Also, let's think, you know, UK inflation is still pretty sticky and high compared to the US inflation reading. So UK inflation, I think, is around 3.9% in the last reading. We do have inflation data coming out soon, but the US had cooled, although it's risen again, had cooled at the time down to around 3.2%. So, you know, that had been the main driver, had been, the, you know, the hope that the expectation that the Federal Reserve would be cutting rates more aggressively and starting earlier than the Bank of England. I think what we're seeing sort of come through now, and the Bank of England has stuck to that relatively hawkish stance. I think, you know, they seem to be singing from that same song sheet that they're not going to be cutting interest rates anytime soon. And there is, I think, a bit of a mixed picture as far as the UK economy is concerned. You know, we just had that GDP data out recently, which showed the slightly stronger than expected November reading, sort of 0.3% growth, which does mean, I mean, we're not out of recession risk territory yet. There is still a possibility that the UK could tip into a recession. But we've also seen that PMI data, the service sector PMI data, has been relatively strong. In fact, it's been stronger than expected, above that 53 level. So, and we know that the Bank of England does watch service sector inflation data quite closely. So up until now, you know, there has been sort of a little bit of strength in the UK economy. The inflation has been high, and that's sort of been supporting this narrative from the Bank of England. However, I think if we just have a look at sort of, you know, recent industry jobs data, for example, we've seen that the number of vacancies being advertised has dropped quite considerably. We've seen that, you know, there could be some weakening, some cooling in the labour market coming through. And I think if that did come through, and we saw that inflation fall then quite considerably, quite quickly, I mean, we've had three think tanks at the end of last week saying that they see inflation cooling to 2% by April. Now, I think that's a little bit strong, but I mean, you know, I think that that might be a little bit too optimistic as far as inflation levels are concerned. But, you know, there is this idea that inflation may cool quite quickly in the UK, in which case then the Bank of England would need to start reassessing that the stance that it has. And I think the sterling traders will then quickly switch their focus to the health of the UK economy and perhaps the perceived deterioration in the outlook for the UK economy compared to the US economy, which is expected to, as we said, sort of, you know, hit that soft landing. I think, you know, the other thing to keep in mind, though, this year with sterling US dollar, it could be a really interesting year because it's an election year for both in both the US and the UK. Whilst I think the election in the UK is still very much in the air as to when it may be happening, I think sort of, you know, towards the start of autumn 2024 is when we might be looking at now. But I think before that, we've got the budget, the UK budget, which again, I think is going to be a really interesting event to be watching as far as sterling is concerned, because if the government feels that it can do some giveaways, then that could actually inject slight inflationary pressures into the UK economy and boost sterling US dollar higher. I think at the moment, given sort of, you know, base case scenarios as we are of the soft landing in the US, a possible slight recession in the UK, I think, you know, a move above 128 in sterling US dollar is probably looking unlikely. I mean, we're seeing it trade between this range at the moment of that 128, and the downside, the lower level I'd be watching for is a break below 126. So that's where we're seeing it. And yeah, a break above or below those levels could lead to a steeper sell-off in the case of below 126, or a push higher above 128.
Indeed, that's going to be a very interesting market to be watching going forward. And I think you made some very good points there, Fiona, especially about the jobs market here in the UK, because over the last 2 years, when there have been concerns about the UK economy, and there has been some weakness in some economic data points, the jobs market has really held up very well. But just in the last couple of weeks or so, we've seen a number of the big recruiters. I think today it was Michael Page, and a couple of weeks ago it was Hayes, coming out and warning about their own performance and actually the wider industry. So that's going to be something that's very interesting to keep an eye on going forward. And we're going to move on now, Fiona, and discuss oil, because if you would have told me in the middle of last year that the US and UK were making airstrikes on Yemen, but then we have Brent down at $77 per barrel, I wouldn't have believed you. But that's the situation that we are in at this point in time. Of course, there's an escalation, there's a human tragedy unfolding in the Middle East. It is having repercussions for global trade, but we're not seeing that bid that you'd usually associate with such tensions in oil at the moment. As I said, we're below $80 on Brent. So the big question here is, Fiona, what's holding oil back at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, what you say is so true. You know, you just wouldn't have expected this sort of level of a non-reaction, if you like, from oil prices, given the geopolitical tensions and risk that that are sort of escalating in the Middle East. But I mean, oil, we're definitely seeing, as far as you mentioned Brent there, I'm just going to mention WTI, which it seems to be, you know, trading in this range between $70 to $75 a barrel. And I think, you know, the reason that we're seeing oil prices relatively subdued, given the environment that's and the geopolitical risks that we're seeing is basically because of ample supply. Now, if we just go back a little bit to the start of sort of, you know, 2023, the questions was all about sort of, you know, will the US and the UK and China, will we, you know, weakness in the economic outlook? But actually, I think demand has held up pretty well across the year, but supply has outpaced that demand, and that's what's really brought the oil prices down. And it's interesting because supply has outpaced demand, even though we've seen these cuts by OPEC Plus with their oil production. It doesn't really have had, it hasn't had as much of an impact more recently. I mean, we had the OPEC meeting in November, and they announced further OPEC cuts, but you know, the price sold off anyway. And that was because I think as well, these cuts that we're seeing from OPEC more recently have been voluntary rather than mandatory. And so the market's reacting to that a little bit. But also we've seen that non-OPEC output, so Brazil and the US, for example, has reached record levels. So between that sort of, you know, ample supply from non-OPEC countries, the voluntary cuts rather than the mandatory cuts in OPEC, that's really been what's been sort of driven oil prices lower or limited any upswings that we have seen in oil prices. Because we have seen a couple, you know, when sort of the geopolitical risk premium has really sort of, you know, been accentuated or come more into focus, then we have seen the sort of, you know, rallies in oil, but they have been limited and the upside has been capped, and that is because of that supply focus. But also the other thing to keep in mind, I think, is as far as the Middle East is concerned, we know that oil supply itself isn't actually being affected at the moment by the level of tensions and the war in between Hamas and Israel. It's much more to do with the geopolitical risk premium that we'd seen added onto the oil prices. So I think the war and the situation in the Middle East, as terrible as it is now, would need to ramp up quite significantly in order for oil prices to actually be, in order for oil supply to be affected itself. So I think there's, I mean, the other thing to be keeping an eye on, I think there's, is what OPEC are going to be doing. I feel that they do have the price supported above that $70 a barrel in WTI. But, you know, as we said, we've seen this year that they've already been cutting oil prices. Saudi Arabia cut their export prices to Asian importers to a 27-month low. So that's also saying something about the demand outlook that they're expecting from China, which is perhaps a little bit weaker than it has been in previous years.
Fantastic. Thank you. So just on all there, when you're looking forward to the rest of the year, we've discussed there in detail the supply side of things, which hasn't actually been impacted that heavily. Is it really a demand side story for oil going forward for the rest of the year? Oil trade is going to be looking more at global growth trends as opposed to supply cuts by OPEC Plus or what's happening in the Middle East going forward, do you feel?
I think, yeah, demand could come more into the picture for 2024. And I think, you know, because the outlook for global growth is a little bit weaker, so that could impact the demand outlook, particularly China. China's going to be a massive focus. I mean, if the US, for example, does manage to hit that soft landing, you know, that we're expecting it to hit, then that's probably going to keep the US side of the equation relatively calm. But I think there is a lot of focus on China. We do think that they've seen, or they have seen across 2023, the recovery from the pandemic lockdowns didn't really materialize in the way that we'd been expecting. Are we going to be getting the stimulus support in 2024 from Beijing that the Chinese economy potentially needs in order to really ramp up again. So there are going to be very much, you know, the focus on China and its demand outlook as well.
Thank you. So we're going to move on now, Fiona. I'm going to look at equities, the equity markets. We've picked out two sectors. Of course, we're in the midst of earnings season, both in the US and here in the UK. So we're going to look at, first of all, the UK supermarkets and then move on to US banks. Now, last week, we had the festive trading updates from FTSE 100 supermarkets. Of course, Tesco, Sainsbury's, Marks and Spencer's were among those reporting. From what you can see, Fiona, were there any standout winners? Was there a winner from the festive trading period for the UK supermarkets?
Oh, good question. I'd like to say that there were probably two. If I could take my pick, I'd say two. Do you know what? I was really impressed with Marks and Spencer's. You know, they posted 8.1% rise in sales over the past 13 weeks. Like-for-like food sales rose 9.9%. That was ahead of the 6.6% forecast. Clothing was up 4.8% against 2.8% expected. So, you know, some really solid numbers coming in. I mean, they did, Marks and Spencer did cite concerns over consumer confidence and economic uncertainty going forward. But I think the turnaround story for Marks and Spencer's has been really quite phenomenal. I think, you know, it's really given conviction. These figures that we've seen today have really given conviction to that turnaround strategy that we're seeing in place. And it does seem to be gaining momentum. So, you know, I do think Marks and Spencer's Christmas sales as well, they were topped only by discounter Lidl, and which is really interesting in itself because they're two extremes. You know, you've got the discounter Lidl and then you've got the M&S, which, you know, is at a higher price point. But I think the thing is with M&S, it does tend to do quite well over the Christmas period as far as food sales are concerned. We see, you know, we do see households sort of, you know, just going, buying up, if you like, across that period. But then will they be able to maintain that new sort of market share that they picked up and those new customers? That's going to be the big question. And I think so far, you know, they've been doing really well. The share price, though, has had a phenomenal 2023. The share price was up around 100% across 2023. Granted, that was after a terrible 2022, but it really outperformed the FTSE and the broader market. So, you know, I think they've had a very good run. My question is, how much further would they be able to run after such a strong 2023? So I think as far as sort of, you know, how much more we could sort of squeeze out of that share price right now, is I think up in question. And I think that sort of came through in the fact that we did see that slight sell-off despite these really strong numbers, just because the market was disappointed that they didn't lift their guidance. Meanwhile, the other one that I mentioned that I was pretty pleased, you know, I thought did pretty well, was Tesco's, who did lift their profit guidance.
Indeed.
Yeah, so they lifted it to 2.75 billion, up from 2.7 billion. Again, strong like-for-like sales. They had, you know, a good Christmas period. And I think that's also down to they're expanding their price matching with Aldi. So, you know, they're really focusing, again, on keeping those price conscious customers, particularly as, you know, interest rates remain high, inflation is still a little bit sticky. So, you know, we haven't won that war on the cost of living crisis yet. And they seem to be there sort of, you know, supporting those consumers. So, yeah, again, another company that I think did pretty well out of what could have potentially been a fairly difficult period.
Yes, I think that's a very good point you make there, Fiona. These results can cause huge amounts of volatility. And the results, from what I can see, were fairly good across all of them. But the point you made there is an important one, that all of these supermarkets had a very strong 2023 in terms of their share price. And going into these results, they had a number of good weeks going into it. So that the sell-offs that we saw, or you know, that the lack of any movement, I feel was more investors booking some profits there. as opposed to being actually disappointed with what the companies did. But again, a very good point, you know, looking at where they are and where they've come from, it's difficult to see where they go in terms of the upside from here without any further more data from those companies. So certainly an interesting sector to be keeping an eye on in the first half of 2024. And we're going to move on now and finish on the last point, Fiona, which is the US banks. They've been reporting over the last few days. I think we have some more this week due to report. They're seen as a bellwether, not only for the US economy, but the global economy, given the nature of their operations. So what are the key takeaways that you've seen so far, Fiona, and what does it mean for the broader markets?
Yes, so they did. They kicked off earnings on Friday. We had JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo Group and Citigroup. And I think broadly speaking, it was a little bit disappointing, but we saw a lot of sort of one-time charges that were being applied. So particularly one-time charges to the US government bank rescue vehicle. And that was for the rescue of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. If we cast our minds back to the collapse of those banks, back in March last year. So there were big charges that the banks paid towards that rescue vehicle, which have impacted their earnings. JP Morgan, you know, largest US bank by assets, missed forecasts with EPS down at was at 3.04, revenue at 38.06 billion. Again, Bank of America also missed forecasts. Wells Fargo, interestingly, because I think this is an area to be, you know, just keeping an eye on as well, is the credit loss provisions. We've seen the credit loss provisions. So this is the amount that the bank set aside for bad loans increase. And that sort of, you know, just gives us a clue about how businesses and people, households are managing with their debt situations. And obviously, when you have an increase in bad loss provisions, then that is a slight warning, you know, that we're probably expecting a slowdown as far as the economy is concerned. So that's in line with perhaps what we're seeing. But Wells Fargo saw a particularly large jump in credit loss provisions. And Citigroup had a slew of sort of, you know, one-off charges, not only for the rescue of the SVB Bank and the Signature Bank, but also an increase in bad loan provisions, and also restructuring costs and charges as the bank goes through a very big restructure. So we did see JP Morgan, as I said, they missed forecasts for Q4, but they did rise. They were the only bank to rise after the earnings. And that was basically because the full year earnings showed were a record high. So although we saw that slight slowdown in Q4, across the year, rising interest rates and the increased cost of borrowing that the bank had experienced, that it's seen sort of had boosted those figures to record levels and saw the share price jump as well on the back of it. I think just as far as what we're expecting this week, Goldman Sachs on Tuesday will be a one to watch. And this is all going to be about sort of, you know, the return of deal making, I think. You know, are we seeing the deal making environment improve again? Because Goldman Sachs, that's where their forte is, and that's where they've suffered in recent quarters as deal making has dried up. But, you know, if we're going to start to see a return in deal making, then we could see an improvement in those figures.
So just a final point here, Fiona, in terms of the net interest margins. Now, this is something that's pulled over here in the UK because, I mean, the FTSE 100 banks don't really have as much activity in the investment banking side of things as their US counterparts. You know, we've had 2 years or more now of interest rate hikes and interest rates being at elevated levels compared to where they were. And that's a real tailwind for banking earnings. Do you think there's some evidence or a slight concern that we're seeing that cyclical driver of banking earnings is now finished, and maybe that we start to see this cap earnings, particularly on the retail and business banking, going forward for these larger organisations.
Yes, a very good point. It's exactly what we've seen, you know, what we'd be expecting to see across this year. You know, as expectations rise that central banks are going to start cutting interest rates, that does mean that banks could expect to see pressure on their net interest margins, and that is something that is also going to not only affect their income but also their outlook. So we'll be very much focused on outlooks, particularly for UK banks, I think, when they report later in the month, I do believe, or early next month, and that's going to be, you know, a key focus. Is net interest margin expected now to start falling? And I think that's what we had seen as well in the previous earnings that we've seen, particularly here in the UK, is that expectation now of NIM to start easing. And also at the same time as NIM is expected to start easing, we're also expecting to see those bad loan provisions increase. So, you know, it does mean that it could be a little bit of a tough time for banks as we head into 2024.
And again, this is going to be probably one of the most interesting sectors, I feel, for 2024, and see how they react to the changes in interest rates. They've been a huge story over the last year, but certainly things are going to heat up there. So Fiona, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.